The following presentation was recorded at the 1996 Teachers Workshop at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
It seems rather awesome to stand in front of such a large group of teachers and ministers and administrators and much larger group than the group last night that was going to be here. So I hope today we can learn something together. Brother John, as far as the unison prayer, what do you mean?
Father, we thank you. We can come to you at all times about all of our concerns. And actually, we can be together this morning in this way. In our hearts, our desires, we pray that we might learn that we can help us to do. Especially minister to those who get involved in learning. Be with Brother Elson as he shares. We might help him to think of those things that we want to share from his experience and what would be good for us. So may our hearts and minds be tuned to you, Father, and we be better prepared to serve others. We pray in Jesus' name.
Before we begin, maybe we could sing a verse of I Owe the Lord a Morning Song.
I owe the Lord a morning song, a gratitude and praise for the kind mercies he
Jesus is. How many know that? Oh, okay. Let's have the brethren take the first part, the little part, and the ladies take the higher part.
Everybody ought to know. Everybody ought to know. Everybody ought to know.
Introduction. I was going to admit that, but she requested that. And said, I don't want to pose as having all the answers by far, but I've taught 11 years in church schools and then 30 years in the public school. And my public school experience, of course, was very different because we're from Holmes County. And there we have a number of schools, public schools, that have only Amish students. Only Amish students. And so when you close the door, you're very much, you might say, your own authority. But on the other hand, sometimes I felt uncomfortable because you were very much aware it was a public school too. And so, anyway, that's my background. And the parents were very cooperative, but then there were also some things we would have liked to have seen different. And I don't want to pose as someone who didn't make any mistakes like that. And in the public school, I taught largely first and second grade. I taught 56 one year, first and second, third one year, and then first and second most of the time. One year I started out with...
got a little competition with that band, the big group, a lot of people,
score a lot of okay. One year I started out with 39 pupils, and then I lost a few by either moving or whatever transpired, and it was about 37. But it wasn't always that many people. All right, just a few verses from John. I had that planned for the afternoon session, but yet I'll read it just this morning. You may turn to if you like. It's John 3. I read a very interesting reading on this, which is applicable for teachers. John 3. I just read verses 1-3. There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. The same came to Jesus by night and said unto him, Rabbi, we know that thou art a teacher come from God, for no man can do these miracles that thou doest except God be with him. Jesus answered and said unto him, Verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. Here are two teachers meeting, and the one says he came to him by night. It says maybe he was busy in the daytime. Maybe he didn't want to be identified. They said, Rabbi, we know thou art a teacher come from God. Now, it seems rather presumptuous for us to claim that. But the reading that I read said that the idea was that you've devoted your life to teaching. You felt a call to teach. You prayed about it before you accepted your assignment. Then you can claim that promise, can't you? I'm a teacher. I'll come from God. God has called me to this position. And that might stand you in good stead when some days become discouraging. Yesterday, we get a number of copies of a light. Maybe your church gets these too. And yesterday happened to arrive, and I thought it was rather unusual. Just before the day before the meetings here, the whole thing. It is the whole thing, yes. Teaching is a mission. And maybe you'll see this yet too. So, and he gave some teachers. One teacher asked herself, should I teach 7-year-olds when so many are perishing? But remembering that it is not the will of your Father which is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish, the teachers and others believe teaching is a mission. I won't read all of this, just a little bit of it. 200 boys were surveyed in the slum section of a large city. They don't have a chance, conclude the analysis, evaluating the boys' possible futures. 25 years later, 180 of these boys were contacted again. All but 4 were successful businessmen, lawyers, and doctors. Each one, when asked how he succeeded, said, there was a teacher. All right, if that much worldly accomplishment can be attributed to the efforts of one teacher, shouldn't a Christian teacher be able to influence dozens of boys and girls for God's kingdom? Christopher Dopp, more than 200 years ago, said education's purpose is to make us as much like Christ as possible. And then says a focused dependence upon Christ gives power and purpose to each day's work. What helps students most? Personal example, many teachers answer. One says, I feel the greatest mission is not just teaching the 3 R's, but in being a true example of our master teacher in word and deed. Each teacher's life should be a testimony. I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And another teacher added, the 5 things I desire that my students see lived out daily are Christ-like love, prayer, discipline, consistency, and purpose. If these traits find root in young hearts, I believe we can praise God for a mission accomplished. And then says, love alone is not enough. Prayer is also necessary. And if you've read anything about Christopher Dunn, he says, considering again the example of Christopher Dunn, he used the rod when necessary to curb misbehavior, but he recognized the need for God's help in solving heart problems in quotes, and prayed daily for it. Kneeling behind his desk after each school day with his roll book spread open before him, he committed each student to God. One evening in 1771, his lifeless body was found, still kneeling in his classroom. All right, then the back says, examples make lasting impressions. If the church gets these, well, you want to be sure to read this through. And this is something I had cut out. This is from a secular magazine, but I thought it was noteworthy what they said. The Secrets of A-plus Teaching. And this is written about 20 years ago, so it's a long time ago. By Secrets of A-plus Teaching, and one heading is, A-plus teachers gather ideas from a wider variety of sources. I don't know if they say this anymore today or not, about 20 years later. Read books and magazines. The books specified most often by them were the Bible. That's amazing. It comes from a secular, I think this is the great teacher, instructor magazine. And the other one you may not be that important. Schools Without Failure by William Glasser. Teachers citing the Bible noted that it was a great influence in their lives and thus a major factor in shaping their educational attitudes. I thought it was very noteworthy coming from a secular magazine. I have a poem here, The Two Temples. A builder built a temple. He wrought it with grace and skill. Pillars and groins and arches all fashioned to work his will. And men said they never saw its beauty. It shall never know decay. Great is thy skill, O builder. Thy fame shall endure for aid. A teacher builded the temple with love and infinite care, planning each arch with patience, laying each stone with prayer. None praised unceasing efforts, none knew of the wondrous plan, but the temple the teacher builded was unseen by the eye of man. Gone is a builder's temple, crumbled into dust. Low lies each stately pillar, food for the consuming rust. But the temple the teacher builded will last while the ages roll, for the beautiful unseen temple was a child's immortal soul. Yes, our work goes on. Someone has said that doctors can bury their mistakes, but teachers, the mistakes they make, their victims have to live with their mistakes at that. Okay. Just to have an introduction, maybe a number of you have this in your school, or some of you may own a personal copy. Handbook for Creative Teaching. How many are familiar with this book? Oh my, well represented. At least one in your school library. If you have a teacher's meeting, like say weekly or something, why, you get ideas from this book, maybe share it together. And this book has a lot of information. It's been a tremendous, a great effort that David Martin, I'm not sure his name now. First name, Martin, was a writer for this book. And then another one, you can get smaller versions too. This is Christopher Dock, the colonial schoolmaster, and he has a number of things in here, rules and so forth. And this is just a part of it. Excerpts from the Schule Ordnung, School Management, and selections from 100 Necessary Rules of Conduct for Children. I think this might be more updated, maybe this is, I mean the language, maybe this is, one that has a little more of the old type English in. I'm not sure now which is which. But he's a very outstanding teacher. Then I don't know if any of you are acquainted with these. I suppose they're still in print. The Master Teacher. It's not put out of any of our organizations. It's not necessarily from a Christian viewpoint. But yet, it has very common sense articles. I think these come about once a week. I picked a few of these out for the afternoon class. But it's a discipline, two vital visions. A choice students don't have, they don't get to choose their teachers. They have to accept us, whoever we are. Ways to keep students from failing, handling the aggressive student, and all just things that you would maybe encounter in your teaching. And if you'd like to just pick one of these up, maybe I could have out on display somewhere, and you just keep them, and the address would be on in case you'd want to ever order them. All right, could we get a little survey quickly? Have any of you been teaching more than 15 years? No hands. 10 or more? No hands. 5 or more? Oh, here we go. Let's say 9. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And how many of this fall will be your first time? Oh, look at those. First time teachers. Wonderful. And God bless you in your new venture. Is it okay if I erase this as a few? This is not really part of the lesson. And maybe this isn't even part of the new school I have, but I'd rather have you keep it what I say is more suggestions and not necessarily the only way. But and your school might have your own method of reading. But
you're gonna have to talk louder.
Oh, louder?
Shut the fan off.
Shut
the mic.
Okay. Are you my head? Can you hear me now if I talk this long? Is it okay if I do? Is that better? Okay. You might have your own grading system, and maybe it doesn't seem fair exactly, but you could number them all the way from, Alright, I guess many schools still use a whole grading system of, I can go A plus A, A minus, B plus B, B minus, A plus, let's just make sure. I'll choose A, B, C, D, and clearly F. And if you suppose you're done, like you have A plus A, A minus, B plus B, B minus, you can get separate. Like number 12, A plus B 12 points, A minus, A B 11, and A minus B 10, and so forth, 9, 8, 7, and so on down. And you could see that if you just had A, B, C, D, to call this 4, 3, 2, 1, and 0. Now, if you have if you give a test or quiz, and a child would get them all right, an A, and then the same child, let's say in later tests for some reason or other, he wouldn't have any right. If you'd average an A and an F, what would you come out with?
C.
How's
that? C.
C.
C. Yes. Yes. Because four is A is 4 points, and F is no points, of course, and it's 2 grades divided by 2, and you come up with 2, C. Okay, the must point, you know, you use percentages. And so you have them all right, what does percentage be? Of course, it'd be 100%. And then you have them all wrong, what does percentage be? 0%. Then what would be the average of these two? 50, and he'd still be failing, wouldn't he? Or maybe it doesn't quite seem fair, but I mean, a school can tell you as you wish. But maybe it doesn't seem fair either. Whatever fitting begins, let's say fitting begins at 55 or 50. And then if you call this and all the way down to 0, and you treat them the same, maybe that doesn't seem fair either. If you get 50 or below, they're treated the same. The one that 50 got half right, it's treated the same way as the one that got none right. It doesn't seem fair either. But it doesn't exactly seem fair in the sense that if the child had them all right one time and none right, he still comes out and can see. It's really hard to bring up that 0. Because it's through the end of what that's worth. But, yes. Okay, when we think of a slow learner, now when you think of a slow learner, maybe you think of someone who is just, careless. Doesn't get his work done on time, or his papers aren't neat, and he's not ready for class, and his desk is cluttered, and so forth. Or maybe you think of someone who is
we
Maybe you think of someone who is labeled as a slow learner. I have just a reading here. This is not with it. I'll just read what it has. It's 100 years from now, it will not matter what kind of car I drove, what kind of house I lived in, how much I had in the bank, or what my clothes looked like. But the world may be a little bit better because that was important in the life of a child. And now going back to slow learners, I'd like to tell you about, as I look around the group, I guess no one knows who I'm talking to about if I talk about a young man from our congregation, but I'll just call him Bob, but that's not his real name. But Bob is a member of our church, and he's born to a family of 5 children. There was a son, then a daughter, then Bob, then 2 more boys. And these children are all aggressive, all except Bob. They have potentials to be leaders. They're outgoing. But Bob was different. He went part-time at public school, then also in the Christian day school. But he had difficulty in learning. He had difficulty learning in school. And he just couldn't perform like his brother, like his sister and brothers did, I'm sure. And even now, it seems like his brother just next to him is in his dad's business and farming and so forth, his business. Well, it seems the one next to him is passing him up. And when he was in instruction class to prepare for baptism, we usually have them memorize some verses, but Bob couldn't learn those verses. Not that he didn't want to, and maybe he tried, but he couldn't memorize those verses. And not long ago, presently, on a Wednesday evening prayer meeting, we have a session of prayer. Then we take the brethren, and the names were arranged alphabetically. Then each one has a topic, whatever they want to choose from, faith or prayer or anything you want to choose to talk about. So not too long, it was Bob's turn. And then he had something, I think, from the doctors of the Bible. Then he asked some questions, and he sat next to me. And then we talked a little bit afterwards, and he said something to the idea that I can't go as deep as some. And I noticed he confused condemnation and commendation in his talk. But I said, well, I'm not sure what I told him. I said, well, you did the best you could. I said, that's all we expect. And that's what his life is like. Then it was rather unfortunate that with his learning problem, that he had some health problems. On the farm, he was hit in the back of the neck, I think, by one of those huge bales, and so that caused some neck problems and back problems, and also, I guess, he lifted too many weights as a child, and that didn't help him anyway. Then I wondered, really, what his problems were like. He still has a lot going for him, and that's one of the goals of a slow learner. He may not learn as fast, he may not learn all the things, but does it really matter? I mean, to equip them for life, that's a long-range goal. And I think that Bob learned the basics, and he gets along well, because he can be employed by his dad very well, and he's a very hard worker and very good worker for the things that he does. But I wondered if his teachers understood his problem, and I think that some of them did. Maybe there's other sensitive, but there was a young lady in his mind, but when he asked her to take her home, her answer was no. And it seems he never got courage to ask anybody again. But I'm sure he's praying about that. And I think maybe the Lord will direct him sometime to that. And because he can function well. Now, did any of you ever hear of Vera Overholt from Minerva area? Anybody know her? 1, 2? When I was thinking of this, she's not a slow learner, of course, but there's slow learners and there's also LD, learning disabilities. Now, she didn't have either of them, but I thought it was amazing what this girl did when she was about the 6th, 7th grade. I guess she was in my room, and I know I didn't do for her what I could have. She was in the back of the room, and she laid in the bed and turned the pages with her feet, and then she had a relative, not sure what, a cousin, Karen Wagler. We related somehow. And she did her writing for her and helped her and so forth. And she even went to college. And her parents, her mother especially, said, my wife says her mother about turned gray overnight, trying to rush her to the hospital when she was almost gone and so forth, and because of her problems. She said, I can't lift my arms and have varied breathing problems. I frog breathe almost all the time. Thank God for the frog breathing invention. Then she went to go to college. And then her sister, Joanne, she has five sisters. She has five sisters. And one of them, I didn't know that, took her to college. Kent State wasn't too far from where they lived. She carried my books and sat beside me and dug up paraphernalia whenever I needed it. And then she even got to go to Europe. Then she says that she taught school for 22 years, but lately she wrote me a letter then when I called and sent me this clipping from the Brotherhood Beacon. It's the official paper of the Conservative Mennonite Conference. And this was when it was written up by them. I'm not sure how old this was. This had been too long ago. Anyway, she said, says, after everyone has written and read his poem aloud to the class, I guess when they would be outside, whatever, and they have passed inspection, we play a game of ball. I am the umpire. My philosophy of school is when we work hard. When we play hard. It says, shaking hands with a person who cannot raise his hand, arms can easily be handled without embarrassment if the able-bodied person will only stretch out his hand a bit farther and need be take the other person's hand and clasp it firmly. Anyway, she ends up by saying, I wouldn't trade my job for the world. You know why? Because I love it. I thought that was really commendable for a girl with her, and it shows a picture of what she has going on Indian Week and what she does. And she's a very supportive family. And it's amazing with all she got, what all she did. Well, children need to be taught, and what we say today, you might say, is more ideal maybe than realistic. And we all have to find our ways of working with our problems, but. All children, we say, need to be taught at their own level. When a parent goes shopping, let's say for his or her child, let's say for a boy that's 10 years old in the fifth grade, the mother does not go and say, yeah, my son is 10 years old. I need two shirts, a pair of dress pants, and shoes for him. We know that would never work because a child could be very normal in the fifth grade, and it could be quite large. I remember having a student in the 7th grade, now he probably had a health problem. He was quite large. When I saw him first, I thought he was, I was new in that community. When I saw him first, he was in a lower grade, like 5th and 6th grade. I thought he was a janitor or some parent that had come. He was much larger than I. And when he was in my room, I probably should not have laughed, but we all laughed together because one day his seat gave way. And he gave way. He could, but is he still living? Yeah. I guess, maybe that's not a good illustration. But take any from any age, they can be tall and short and so forth, and yet be very normal. And so we don't just go in and say, this is what we want. Yet somehow we expect that someone is in the fifth grade, is 10 years old, they should be able to do this work, All right, what is meant by a slow learner? In Ohio, the slow learner is called developmentally handicapped. His IQ is 80 or below. They have gone by other names, EMR, educable, mentally retarded, DD, developmentally disabled. And now this fall, they will be called mentally retarded, and the IQ is to be 70 or below. All right, now following comes from another source. Goals for the education of slow learners, or educable retarded. The major goal, provide the kind of practical training and education that'll prepare the child for his role as a healthy, independent, contributing citizen. Characteristics of educable retarded. One, shows rate of intellectual development, which is approximately one-half to three-fourths of that expected of the normal child at the same chronological age. Now, this is rather old material, but I hope it will still be applicable. And then, leaflet I have here, the causes, and that's not so important. The cause might be due to heredity. It may be due to environment. It might be a combination of both. Maybe there's no magazines or books or in the home and so forth. And also it might be due to maybe don't know why. an undiscoverable cause. And I read the major goal to prepare the child for his role as a healthy, independent, and contributing citizen. And then says he can be expected to acquire fourth or fifth grade achievement in basic academic subject matter. Another one, does not begin formal reading or formal arithmetic skills until between C8, that is chronological age, 9 to 12, or mental age, 6 to 8, and can develop adequate communication skills for ordinary situations. 5, in most instances, can develop social and interpersonal adequacy. 6, in most instances, can develop occupational skills, unskilled and semi-skilled work, which will result in economic independence in adulthood. So they can still manage in adulthood. And 8, learning tasks are very difficult and slow, requiring extensive time and effort to attain knowledge more easily acquired by other youngsters. Are very difficult and slow, requiring extensive time and effort, but others get pick up very easily. And must be formally taught many factors of living with other children acquired through experience and incidental learning. All right, we cannot exactly say that just the IQ alone is sufficient to label a child mentally retarded. And as careful as people want to be, it's most surprising they call it mentally retarded because it seems like a very bad label. Other areas also be included and considered, causes for slow learning, which I mentioned. And this handbook here lists 60 ways to help the slow learner. It's a magazine that Rod and staff puts out. Can you remember that magazine? Comes
The Christian School Builder.
The Christian School Builder. Thank you. I just couldn't get that in my mind. Yes, that'd be very good for you to get, or your school to get. You're coming from CLP or Christian Light Press or Rod and staff, and you would know the material that you could identify with and you could trust. Now, it's rather hard when you talk about slow learners because they are mentally deficient. But it's easy to confuse these children with those that have learning problems. And those are called the LD problems, LD child, learning disabled or learning disabilities. They have a normal or high intelligence, have normal sight and hearing, but they have trouble learning. And I have some of these are quotes I'm going to always mention as a quote. They can and do learn, but may have trouble reading, writing, memorizing, and organizing. If the problem goes undetected, children with LD usually fail in school. They often misbehave out of boredom. A certain individual had an outlet in her art, but many times these frustrated children pour their energy into less fruitful endeavors. Research shows that a high percentage of youth in detention centers have learning disabilities. And learning disabilities are permanent disorders that affect the ability to take in or express information. Some experts say at least 10% of today's school-age children have this hidden handicap. And then they may make adaptions. Pardon me, call attention to myself, but I consider myself as having, as you might say, a slight case of dyslexia. When someone asks me to turn right, I might turn left. And then I adapt. I adapt, or you might say I compensate for that. If someone calls, once they know how to get to our house, well, I say, just wait, I'll call my wife. She's better in giving directions than I am. And our neighbor a neighbor told me about, I'm not sure he was talking about it. I mean, he said a person had given directions for someone, and they couldn't find this place. They couldn't follow the directions, just weren't there. And so they thought, oh, yes. She's a sister to my wife. My wife has dyslexia. Maybe she does too. That was the idea. And so he went back. Whenever he said turn right, he turned left. He just the opposite. And he got right to the place. That was very interesting. All right. As a teacher, you have great responsibility and privilege to minister to those children in your classroom who are mentally retarded
and those who have learning disabilities. You can make a world of difference in their lives by being a loving, understanding person. With a room full of students, it can be somewhat frustrating to cope with children who can't perform as well as the average, in quotes, student. Now, which group of students should you spend the most time with? And a certain booklet had 10 commandments for educators, and they were all very good, but there was one that you would not agree with, I don't think. Said, and this one said, give those with the greatest intellect the most help. Well, one teacher said he tries to teach for the average student because he felt that most of them come in that bracket. So he tries to teach for the average student. And it would not be doing justice to your class to spend an over amount of time and energy in playing for the slow learner or LD at the expense of all the others in your class. So as much as possible, you need to give help to those who need help in ways that don't consume too much of your time. Now, maybe you'd have some ideas, like a classmate could help him, or if you have multi-grades, I suppose a number of you, how many of you have more than one grade in your classroom? Oh, look at all the hands. Yes. And maybe an older one could help a younger one. And but improper ways would be to make a child stay in just because he can't learn. He needs to be outside perhaps worse than the others do. And just because he can't learn, he shouldn't be penalized by having to stay in to try to catch up. And I don't want to make anybody feel guilty. You need all the encouragement. You need all the courage you can get. But someone asking for working on this topic. I think someone told me that a small child in sixth grade had to stay in all the whole day because no fault of his own, but he just couldn't get his work done. And I guess this person had dyslexia. It's a book written by Abe Schmidt. I've never read it, but someone told me about it, called The Brilliant Idiot. He's very, very intelligent, but he had learning problems. And a number of years ago, there was a boy in my class, and when we in the first grade, when we had these very easy, simple spelling words, of course, sometimes he wrote down numbers instead of letters. And so the whole year, I think he learned a few words. And then, of course, he was retained. And some people think it's very, very bad to retain. It isn't helpful at all. We may not get to that section. But anyway, he was retained. Then they took first grade over again. And then he was in my room again for second grade. So that made 3 years. So I thought it's time that he passes on to someone else. So I passed him on. The teacher said he can't cooperate. He can't function in my room. And so he came back again to my room. And he was there for, that made him 4 years he was there. But then what was interesting was, but the other classmates, sometimes we fail somebody. Sometimes I used to think the parents almost feel worse than the student. But a student may cry when you tell him he's going to be retained because he doesn't like the idea of being severed from his friends and his classmates. He doesn't like that at all. And it's hard, but this boy, he was small for his age. And the children just seemed to accept him and didn't make much of it at all. And then when he was in fifth or sixth grade, surprisingly, his teacher said, he was doing all right. He's doing okay. But then I was told that maybe she didn't make her, expect much of her students or didn't make them work quite as hard, whatever. Anyway, as another teacher might have. But it was amazing. And once in a while, I run into him yet. And it's very, very friendly. How can you tell whether you have a student that is mentally retarded or, as you might say, a slow learner, and maybe it's better to say the mentally retarded, an IQ score, which should tell you a lot. As I said, there's not to be enough. How does he perform in class? Information from other teachers, his parents, his physical condition. And you may wonder, is he really a slow student, mentally retarded? Is he just lazy? Perhaps he has poor study habits. What is his home life like? Does he have breakfast before he comes in the morning? Does he get enough sleep? Does his home environment encourage learning? And does the family enjoy reading? Now, how many of you have maybe an aide or your students are taken out of class for special help? Are you any of you have situations like that? Some of you do. They're taken out of class for special help. Some schools may have special help for the slow learner. Maybe he's taken out of the classroom a set amount of time per day or several days a week. But I would assume for the most part that those in your classroom, that you are faced with the job alone. But this is a challenge of this session, to do what you can to help the slow learner and the learning disability student in your own room. And in our area, the schools might have different methods, but in our area, the public school has a certain school where the slow learners go to. I mean, they have other classes too, but they have a special setup there also for the slow learners, for the elementary 1 to 3, for the upper elementary 4 to 6. Then they have another school where those with learning disabilities go to, and also, I guess, elementary and secondary, and upper elementary. It was interesting to find out that some of the, as you might know, Holmes County has the largest settlement of Amish in the world. And it was interesting to find out, and there's a lot of parochial schools. It was interesting to find out that some Amish families take their children out of their own school and send them to the public school, which had these facilities. And for several years, and they take them back out again and put them in their own school. And in a sense, that speaks well of them, because they could see their child has a problem and they're afraid they would not be able to adjust and they would be neglected in their own school. And the other side of the picture is, are they aware maybe of the environment they're placing the child in? But in our area, many are so considerate of the Amish beliefs, but that in a sense, it's changing too. The teacher can set the atmosphere of the class so they will accept the slow learner and the LD student. And the rest of the class needs to learn to accept this child. They have to learn that it's okay for Johnny to use blocks if he's doing math, or some kind of abacus or something to do his math, or buttons, whatever, counters to do his math. That it's all right for him to do that. The slow learner needs lots of repetition. In the fall, when school begins, he needs lots of review. In fact, somebody has said that some children, these are normal children, that over the summer, they might drop as far as 4 months in reading over summer months. But remember, the slow learner is more like than unlike the other children. That we have to remember. He's more like the others than he is unlike them. And if you wouldn't even have these special slow learners with a low IQ, you would still have the slow, fast, and you might say the average students in your classroom. And parents can help at home, and you can modify assignments, less math problems. You can give them less spelling words. In math, you could grade them on what he did. Maybe he has so much time, like in a test, grade them on what he did do in a certain amount of time. I had a little boy in my room one time, but he wasn't a slow learner, nor was he a learning problem, I don't think. He was such a traumatic experience for him. When I give certain experiences or certain things that kind of stand out, I'll always remember this boy, I guess, because he was born out of wedlock, and then to a single girl, and then she gave him up for adoption, and a childless couple adopted him. And then one morning he found his mother. She had passed away. I'm not sure what her ailment was that she passed away rather suddenly. I think her husband didn't even know that she was gone. He got up quietly. He knew she wasn't well. He got up quietly and went out to do his chores. The little boy woke up, went in bed, and his mother was gone. Then they relocated, and that brought the boy to my room. And I know I could have done a lot better with him. But it seemed he just couldn't work, so anyway, this doesn't fit to this, so I told him, when you watch the clock that goes from one number to the next, I want you to have this row of problems done. You must have these done from the time that goes from one number to the next. Then he did pretty good, and later he's well adjusted to life. And what makes his, like I say, his truth is stranger than fiction. In time, his dad remarried. And who should his dad marry but the boy's real mother? And I'll never forget that. And now he has provided a home. He has a nice place to live. He's provided a home for his mother in addition to his home. And they send their children to Parochial School. And later on, when he got to be like 7th, 8th grade, he was kind of known as I don't like that term necessarily, the class clown, but he was the life of that class. And was very jolly, very happy, and very well adjusted. In Matthew, we greet him on what he did. Instead of writing complete sentences to answer questions, you may permit him to write only the answer. And a number of the ideas I got from a book called Exceptions, a Handbook for Teachers of Mainstream Students. That was for the LD students, but hopefully they also would work with slow learners. Like they suggested using color coding textbooks. Like they have a textbook, a green color would mean, you know how we highlight things to remember them and so forth. Green is vocabulary words and terms, and then pink highlight the definitions of these words. Then yellow, the facts, the names and dates and topic sentences. And the teacher's book could also be color-coded. It should also be color-coded. The advantage of this is it enables a slow or low-learning reader to use a standard textbook, thus reducing the need for supplementary materials and singling out the student as different. And color coding makes it visually clear to the student what information is expected for mastery on examinations. And color coded texts provide an excellent guide for the test review. All students might be encouraged to use them for review. And the teacher also benefits. The text can help him assimilate the information, organize lectures, and prepare examinations. And this is called a compensatory technique, to help the child just learn the basics when they have problems. Like the person with a broken foot can't walk, but he can if he uses crutches. So this is like, you might say, like a crutch. And this way he compensates for the temporary problems he has. I think I missed that when I talked about this boy I had. Well, that isn't that important anyway, that... this teacher, this one child had in the 5th grade, I consider him a very, very excellent teacher. But this 5th grade student couldn't master the problem, master the course of study for that year, so he was retained. And the next year, the child didn't do much better, retained again for 3 years in the 5th grade. You can imagine she was proportionately a different size in her classmates, and proportionally perhaps for the third time somewhat more or less going over the same material, and it may have been probably did her more damage than good to have to go over so often. In writing activities, the learning disability student may have trouble spelling, and a small spelling dictionary could be helpful. Or one suggestion was the student, if he, maybe when he writes a paper or whatever, he could put SP above the words he's not sure that are spelled right, or that he knows they weren't spelled right. This way the teacher knew what words the student needed to work on and also taught the student to be aware of his errors. And then, math, in his, he could have handy, multiplication tables. And for him, because maybe he has a hard time memorizing those. And a calculator, if he understands the concepts first, and needs to be a compensatory tool, he can use it to check his answers, and maybe he could do 5 problems on his own, and maybe 5 with the calculator. Then story problems, he can work with large numbers and small numbers with the calculator. And it was also suggested if a child has a problem maybe keeping his numbers straight, he wants to add. Well, he can take a sheet of paper and fold the paper the other direction to keep his numbers in a straight row, and to keep to help him with his alignment, or graph paper, half inch squares. Then someone said this is not good. This is not recommended for elementary students, but I don't know if anybody wanted to go through with that or not. But now just take a minute's time, and I tried it myself. We called it. I'm not sure what they call it. Oh, finger multiplication. You call your thumbs a 6, in the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then, let's say I have here 8 times 9. So 5, 6, 7, 8. No, 6, 7, 8 would be this one. And 9 would be this one. And I form a bridge. Then the ones that form the bridge and below are 10s. So the two that form the bridge would be, this side would be 10, 20, 30, over here, 40, 50, 60, 70. That's 70. Then here you take these and multiply by the other one. And 2 times 1 is 2. 70 plus 2 is 72. Well, a child had gotten very adept at that before he could do it quickly. But it might be something he could go back on. But then you get to another problem. I found out I ended up with 20 plus 16. And can a child add that in his head? If he can count by tens, he can. 16, 26, 36, and so on. And vocabulary. You might have your own method. And maybe, I could just mention this was it's a keyword mnemonic method. It's to help the memory. And maybe you have your own ways of helping children. Maybe a spelling word. Maybe they break it down into little parts or something, they memorize part of it. And but this was given as a kind of new word and a definition. I'll make that very brief. Like one was given barrister, and the name the meaning of a barrister is a lawyer or barrister. But take the first part, bear. Now you think of an animal. Now think of an animal like a bear. Think of a bear acting like a lawyer. And then you have barrister, then connect barrister and lawyer together. But that doesn't seem very applicable because you have to use, the definition should be synonyms. You have to have a special list of words. Then another one is mannequin. Now what is a mannequin? It's a dwarf. Well, think of mannequin, think of the first part, man. Then think of an imaginary link, think of a short man. Maybe you could put mannequin and then dwarf together. Well, there may be other ideas to aid their memory. Then remedial techniques. You need a lot of repetition and a lot of help in me working various subjects. There are different styles of learning. And there's a hearing. There's the auditory style. They base their hearing. And visual style, seeing. Kinesthetic style, moving or touching. If a child learns best by hearing, then you should give him verbal as well as written directions and assignments. Give the student oral rather than written tests. I know that's very hard to do those things in a big classroom. Drill aloud to themselves or to another student. Have another student read important information to the LD student who is an auditory learner. He listens by hearing. Then have someone read important information to that child. And have the student read important information aloud to themselves or to another student. Then the visual report, a visual type, seeing. Have the student use flashcards printed in bold, bright letters and try to visualize words, information in his head. And the visual learner could read to an auditory learner. He can read well, visually. He can read to someone who goes by hearing. And allow written reports instead of oral reports. Then the kinesthetic. They learn more easily by moving or touching. And classroom demonstrations or permit the child, as I mentioned, the child who needs maybe blocks or colors for math, especially when teaching abstract concepts, maybe like fractions and measurement. And then, now going back to remedial techniques, all teachers are involved in remedial teaching. The need may show up in a chapter test you gave or on a test that accompanied the text, achievement tests, some of that nature. And remedial teaching is a reteaching of concepts or skills using a different type or approach, material or procedures. In remedial teaching, the teacher should be aware of the learning style the student has, auditory, visual, or kinesthetic. And you can purchase materials or you can make some of your own. So that takes a lot of time. Then John, you're acquainted with this CLE reading brochure flyer they send out? And there's a CLE. It was just from May 1996. And they'd like to know how many people would be interested in something like this. And they say that they had some reading machine here. They said it was not unusual for high school students to read at 1,400 to 1,800 words per minute with 90% to 100% comprehension of using this machine. Then he wanted to know if they get a cheap machine going. Would you be interested? And it sounds like somebody would be very helpful to help children with even an average student learn to read faster and also comprehension. And then that, you don't hear so much about this now. Have any of you been acquainted with the call of SRA? Oh, I see several hands up. Now, the advantage of that is, but when you use that in your own school, you might want to pull out some of the stories, because some of the stories would be on evolution, that type of thing. And you don't really have to buy all the material. You can make your own answer sheets. And the child doesn't have to do all the exercises. It has a lot of phonic exercises at the end. But the SRA is somewhat like a color code, and the child does not know, maybe like, say, a fourth grade child. He may be reading on a, when he starts in the bottom, or depending on what he's starting with, he may be reading on a very low level. But the interest is high, and he does not know I'm reading this baby stuff like Run, Alice, Run, and that type of thing. But he's reading something that interests him, that holds his attention. And yet it's very, very, vocabulary is very controlled and very simple. And as they score themselves, they grade themselves, and mark their grade, and then they keep on working the number of about 20 stories or so for one color, then they can go to another color. And if they still don't do well, they can maybe take another set and start all over again. And then there's also books, but we know the type of books that are often written are books that you might not want in your classroom. But there are books that are written that contain lower level vocabulary, but the content would be of interest to the student of his age. A poor reader, say in the fourth grade, might be embarrassed to be asked to read a basic text for grade one. Say, now, Johnny, you have a problem with reading? I want you to take this book home, or when you have time at your desk, or you read this book, and you'll find it easy to read. It's a book you can read and understand. Well, you know, it says grade one, and they all said one. Everybody knows it. You're reading a first grade book. Well, in a book that is written while on a lower level, but of high interest and not marked, then he might even be, then he would not be afraid to be not being labeled, and also he would even do maybe a book report on a high interest book, but low level. And I have that address, but the person that told me about this, I mentioned some of the things that the books were about, like athletic stars and that type of thing. And I don't know if you could find books. There may be surely some you would think that would be okay for you to use. All right, then spelling. Spelling books often don't follow, it says, a system of progression. And like the Deutsch list, the Deutsch has contained words that students most often use in their writing. Deutsch list has words on the pre-primer, primer, and then grades 1, 2, 3 level. And then survival skills, they have not learned them through normal channels, and so they need to have help with these. And the short-term goal, revival skills, is to be successful in a regular classroom. And the long-range goal is to be able to succeed in life. And think of reading textbooks. Maybe they don't understand the questions at the end. Usually the first question is usually found first in the reading, isn't it? I think probably it'd be best to read the whole thing through first. Then read the question in the back, the first question, and that'll probably be the answer come first. The second question will be found next, and so forth. And then, and the SQ3R method, I think that's called that one in the SRA program, SQ3R. It's a survey. It's the SQ is a question, the 3 R's, read, recite, and review. And in this book, gives a quite expanded section of this book, how to use that. And survey, go through the chapter, you might say, and look it over and see how long it is and so forth. Read the last chapter. Read the last paragraph, or read the summary, or read the question at the end of the chapter. Skim through and look at the subheadings and so forth. Then question, turn the heading and subheadings into questions. Like, for instance, oceans. Where are they located? Which is the smallest? Which is the largest? They could write down some of their own questions and answer them. And the more time you spend surveying and questioning, the easier it will be to read the assignments. Then read, and if you don't know a word, write it down. Look up later what it is. Read, review, and recite. I won't go over that for lack of time. And then language skills. How many of you teach like third grade on down? Third grade on down. Okay, this, I would just like to, there's just one method. There's many other methods that might be just as good, but when sometimes you tell a child, let's say thanks to you, better paragraph than whatever you are thankful for. Well, it might be rather this part to do that. But if you have maybe a structure, I'd say you say to a child, the first sentence would be, I'm thankful for three things. And for a first grade, they might just write about two things. Maybe the junior encapsulation, punctuation, and so forth. Those are main encapsulation, punctuation. Then you say, I'm thankful for two things. I'm thankful for my home. I'm thankful for food. And then for a second grader, beyond, they can do the same thing, but they give a supporting sentence to each one. Then later on, they give two supporting sentences or three supporting sentences. Suppose the second grader would write, I'm thankful for three things. I'm thankful for food. All right. Then underneath, he'd have to write one or two, whatever you would say, sentences about that. I like the meal that mother makes. I like the smell of freshly baked bread or whatever. And then he said, I'm thankful for my home. I'm glad when my father played a game with me. Or, I'm glad when we can go on a trip or something like that. I'm thankful for home. The next one, I'm thankful for my family, whatever they need, right? Wonder if they need that. And when it's structured like that, it's much easier than to write. And, the one book two had about the main idea, main idea one, main idea two, and underneath there will be useful points and here's useful points. And good English text may well give you plans too on how to have your writing. And then for math, I don't know if those are can you buy those? Like flow charts, especially for a problem, a child has a problem. Think of division. Think of all those things that are required. You divide, then you multiply, then you subtract, you bring down. Now, all those steps that are required for dividing. If you have a flow chart, like this, I just wrote this down, like addition, column addition in grade 3. You start, add the ones. Then, is the amount greater than 10? Yes, and put down the ones and carry the tens. And there is another column and so on. It gives a flow chart that shows one step after another. And a child who gets bogged down, look at the chart and knows what step comes next. Then study skills. We talked about SQ3R. There's also a point system. And this stands for different names. And also PQRST system. I probably have those written down somewhere, but I won't go into that. All right. It would seem to be common knowledge that before students begin to do math, for example, or English, the teacher needs to go over a lesson, explain it, show an example, perhaps. And this teacher, I kept his room in good order, pardon me, I don't want to find fault with teachers below them anyway. But anyway, it seems a bit strange to me that the assignment is written on the board, and then the students were supposed to start working on them. No explanation given for the math, no explanation given for the English. They opened their book, and I guess the teacher's book, they considered their own text that they were using, they considered that would be very self-explanatory. And, I substituted once, I'm not teaching it.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit ChristianLearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.